Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Today we're coming to you from our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Inga Auerbacher was born in a village in southwestern Germany, an area where her family had lived since the early 1600s. Jews and Christians had lived together peacefully until the Kristallnacht coordinated attacks on Jewish people in Nazi Germany took place in November of 1938. 4 years later, Inga Auerbacher and her family and her parents were among those rounded up by the Nazis and sent to the Terezin or Terezinstadt concentration camp in Czechoslovakia. 7-year-old Inga arrived at the camp clutching her doll Marlene, and over the 140,000 people sent to the camp, she and her parents were among the few who survived. Following liberation, Auerbacher and her parents immigrated to the U.S. She worked for over 38 years as a chemist, and since 1981, she's been writing and speaking about the Holocaust and working to promote tolerance and human rights. Her books include I Am a Star, Child of the Holocaust, and she's speaking at the University of Sioux Falls this evening at 7 o'clock at the Jeske Fine Arts Center, and she joins us here in the studio. And is it all right if I call you Inga?
Oh, sure. And thank you so much for inviting me here.
And it's great to have you here. I'm wondering about this. I've talked to other Holocaust survivors. It was also around 1981, early 1980s, that they started talking as well. And I'm wondering why it was that, you know, for you, you didn't talk about it for so many years.
Well, I wanted to blend in. I wanted to become a real American. And when in 1981 there was a world gathering, first world gathering of Jewish Holocaust survivors in Jerusalem, and I decided, I wrote a poem. I'm a lyricist, I found somebody at work in the ladies' bathroom, by the way, and she talked about how she sings in nightclubs and things, and I said, oh, can you write music? I have a poem. Sure, give it to me. But then one day she wrote a song, the melody to We Shall Never Forget, which became the only original song presented at this very large meeting. And then I decided it's time. I want to write my story. I've written lots of more songs and which were recorded. I've written 6 books, not all on the Holocaust, though. That's when I opened up.
Why is it important for you to be able to share this story and to talk about what is really a horrible time in world history and an awful experience that you had to go through?
First of all, very few Jewish children survived. There were 1.5 million Jewish children who were killed. Even in my camp, we were about 15,000 children, maybe 1% survived, and their voices were silenced, and I'm still here. I feel a special mission to keep their memory alive. Also, as a warning that these things should never happen again. Unfortunately, there's so much happening again today. Genocides have happened again. Have we learned anything from this time? Unfortunately, very little. But if we do nothing, it could still be even worse.
You were so young when this
yes.
happened. You were just, the Kristallnacht happened.
Yes.
You were, what, three years old?
I was not even 4, just before my 4th birthday.
Did you understand what was happening?
I didn't understand, no, of course, but I knew that terrible things were happening. I was there when they broke all the windows in our house. My grandfather and father were taken to Dachau. I knew it. There were serious things going on, but I felt as long as I had my parents, let's say my mother, around me that time, she would take care of me.
And your father came back. He was released from Dachau?
Yes, he was. My grandfather, too. It was like a trial kind of thing to show them, oh, this is what's going to happen, and get out of Germany. Because my father was a disabled war veteran from World War I. He had the Iron Cross, even. He never wanted to leave Germany. This was his home. I mean, we lived in Germany forever. Jews lived in Germany over 1,000 years. And we had heritage in each of the villages 200 years. I mean, this was home. It's like saying to an American, leave tomorrow. You know, leave everything behind. Very difficult. I mean, you were citizens of that country. Although they took my citizenship away soon after I was born. I was stateless then. But the idea of leaving was very difficult. But when they came home from Dachau, my father realized we have to leave. This is real now.
And you tried to leave?
Oh, sure. But all the doors to the free world were closing. America, you would have to wait maybe who knows how many years till your number came up. And not only that, my father needed a higher sponsorship because he had a disability, although he could work. But his right shoulder was very badly injured.
Now, it was 42 when you and your parents were sent. Is it Theresienstadt?
Yes, in Czech it's easier to say Theresien. Yeah. But actually, we were supposed to go transport in 1941 already, in December, to Riga, Latvia. My whole school, I had to go to a Jewish school, which closed after 6 months, never finished my first grade, second, 8 years of school down the tube. And we got out of that one because my father wrote to the Gestapo secret police that he was a disabled war veteran with the Iron Cross, and it helped. But not my grandmother, and most of my school friends all were sent to Riga, where they were sent to the forest and shot. I went to that place. I saw it. Unbelievable. At least 52 mass graves, Birkenike Forest, near Riga. And more than 50,000 people are in this one forest alone. And there were many like this. Then a few months later, we were sent to Theresien. And I was the youngest in a transfer of close to 1,200 people.
When you were there with your... No, your parents were there with you? Were you able to be together, or did you see them?
Yeah, most men, women, and children had to live separate. Mm-hmm. But we were allowed to live together, the disabled war veteran, in very close quarters. I mean, this double, triple-deck bunk beds. You had no chair. You had no table. Your home was the bunk bed. And there were children there, too, and our fathers were the war heroes. Some had the legs missing, arms missing, holes in the head. I remember one had a draining wound still. And I felt that as long as I could be with my parents, they would protect me. But most men, women, and children had to live separate, but they could still see each other. Theresien was a way station, the antechamber to Auschwitz. At that time, we didn't have gas chambers there. But they were being built, incomplete, at the end of the war. Eichmann, who was in charge of the Jewish question, the final solution, came many times there. I saw him there. Whenever he came, another transporter, another one, to Auschwitz mainly.
Now, this was a camp, if I understand correctly, Theresien was something of, the Nazis used it as a something of a propaganda camp.
Well, they did use it for propaganda, but it was all bogus.
Yeah.
The International Red Cross came once in 1944 in the summer, and because there were rumors, you know, circulating that people are being killed. Okay, we'll show Theresien, we'll clean it up. And all the famous people are there and so forth, and that science, the school, the playground, none of these things existed. And they put even some shows on, and they went away saying, oh, it's not bad here. I mean, they're together, but they can live. They give children extra sardine sandwiches. A soccer game was played for them. And they believed this hoax. As soon as they were away, almost the whole camp was emptied. In fact, they emptied quite a few before to make it look less crowded. And they were only allowed to see certain areas. Only certain areas were shown to them. Only. We were off limits. Only people who still looked halfway decent.
I can't imagine, since of all the people there, only about 1% survived?
For the children.
For the children.
About 1%, you know, very young children. I was there between the age of 7 and 10. So,
and I imagine many of them, you became friends. I'm wondering.
We became. My best friend didn't make it. My bunkmate, and her father was half Jewish. He walked with the limp. The mother totally. Ruth was brought up as a devout Christian, and she never made it to her 10th birthday. Never made it. She was from Berlin, and when she left, I had this doll. She had the same one, and she gave me some of her doll's clothes. She took the doll to Auschwitz. And she said, one day you'll give the stuff back to me. And of course, I couldn't. The DALPA actually has a history. She was made for the 36th Olympics with blue eyes, blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And she had the name Inga. Now, I named her Marlene after Marlene Dietrich. We were had the same German name. My parents wanted me to be German. German name, everything.
This doll, Marlena, this is...
Yes.
She was with you throughout the whole experience?
Absolutely. I gave it to the Holocaust Museum. In fact, they recently had an article about her in the Washington Post. But, of course, we all became sick. Mice, rats, fleas, and bedbugs, those were our companions. And I remember there was one girl in this compound. She got a little bit more food, maybe a piece of bread more. And, of course, hunger was the constant companion. I mean, and I prayed, and we were told, don't go near her. She has a terrible disease, and you'll catch it. It's awful. And we said, why shouldn't we play with her? And I prayed to God that I have the same whatever she had. And I came to America. I mean, I knew I was sick already in the camp. They did some tests. And after a few weeks in America in 1946, when I came to America, it was tuberculosis, and that was my second Holocaust. It was a tremendous, tremendous battle to get out of this. They put me in the hospital for 2 years in bed. There was no cure at that time. Came home. My parents had an apartment in Brooklyn, walk up third floor. That's why they were allowed to take me home, because only one child at home, me. And then an antibiotic was discovered, streptomycin, called the miracle drug. And I was given that on an experimental basis, and it cured me. But then I had relapses again, and in college even. And I met, actually, the man who discovered streptomycin, one of the most important discoveries of the 20th century. And he was cheated of the Nobel Prize. I met him, and because Waxman got the Nobel Prize for it. It was that huge, huge, the first drug against TB. It would cure other sicknesses too. Of course, the bug is so strong, they needed more drugs. I had, after a while, a whole cocktail of them, 26 pills a day plus 2 shots of streptomycin. And we wrote a book together, Finding Dr. Schatz. I've written 6 up to now. And we made a film about this. And I would love if there's anybody out there, a Hollywood producer. Hey, listen, this is your next Oscar. This story, it's marvelous.
Inga Auerbacher is a Holocaust survivor. She's discussing her experiences during the Holocaust this evening at the University of Sioux Falls. Her talk begins at 7 o'clock at the Jeske Fine Art Center's Meredith Auditorium. And we've only had a few minutes to talk here, but more of your story, if you're in Sioux Falls,
absolutely,
stop by and you can hear that.
Please come, everybody. It's free. Okay. I want to meet you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for sharing a little bit of your story with us.
Thank you so much.